This is ESPN Radio.
Dan Engelick Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golick Jr. and Chris Canty. Still a lot going on here. Dan Orlovsky going to join us in about a half hour here, try and figure out what him and Ryan Clark were breaking down on the giant video board again today on NFL Live. Chris, that segment has taken that show by storm right now. Dan and RC must leave sweating after work.
No question about it. Those guys both put in a lot of work, and those telestrations are awesome. And it seems like ESPN got the memo, because some is good and more is better. And more we're starting to see those two working together at the big board. So I'm all here for it. Make no mistake about it. Those two guys put in work. They know what the hell they're talking about, and it shows in their breakdown. So I love it.
Those two finished the show, and their Fitbits or their Apple Watch shows their exercise rings closing. I finished this show, and I have met maybe one standing goal of the entire day. So our show and their show built a little bit different, but that's fine. We're a comfortable show, and we enjoy that about ourselves here. Now, yeah. It's time to get comfortable being uncomfortable, because that's – I know. Someone played – Devin, hit the loser game show sound for that. I deserve it. I don't feel good about what I just did. I'm going to wait around for the shame on that one.
I got to look for it, Mike.
At least, Mike, you know what? At least I can say this. You're willing to wear the L.
Yeah,
like,
man.
As somebody that just kept catching L's from his lady yesterday, at least you're willing to accept your L's. Because for me, we know the L that I took yesterday in terms of figuring out what I was going to do for dinner, because wifey was having none of that. She knows she's cooking on Wednesday and Thursday, that coming off of a weekend where she had to cook on Friday and Saturday. But I caught yet another L on Monday Night Football. And I'm not sure how it happened, but Tyler Fulgham, who we love, on ESPN's Daily Wager, you know, you see him there all the time. He gave us the play of the night, which was teasing the Giants up to 17 points. And so I decided, hey, babe, let's put a little friendly wager on the game tonight. Give me 17 points, and I'm going to take the Giants, and you take the Bucks. And she said, wait a minute. You're saying that you're actually going to take the Giants, and you're going to think that the Giants are going to lose by less than 17? And I was like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. She was like, bet. The Giants about to get dusted. And I was like, what are you talking about? You never watch football. She said, yeah, I know I don't watch a whole lot of football, but one team has Tom Brady as their quarterback, and the other one has Daniel Jones. I'm pretty sure the team with Tom Brady is going to win by more than 17 points. Now, what we put on the line, Gojo, was doing the dishes for the entire week while we're hosting friends and family for Thanksgiving.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Chris, you just
and
signed
so that's
up
to... L, that's the L that Tyler Fulgham has me wearing for the rest of the week. Like, I mean, I'm just catching L's all over the place. I caught the L with figuring out what I had to do for dinner, fending for myself. Then I caught the L while watching my New York Giants on Monday Night Football soil themselves. I don't understand what's happening. I feel like I'm losing all the way around. On top of that, I got Ryan McGee coming on our show saying he don't like collard greens. What the hell is going on?
Hey, Chris, it's all bad right now. I mean, you essentially signed up to clean porta potties at the Chili Festival here, trying to do dishes during Thanksgiving week here. So that seems like your own bad decision-making there. I cannot speak for Ryan McGee, who we love, great ESPN college football writer, who somehow inexplicably is as south as south can be, does not like collard greens. Don't make sense of it. Aaron Taylor, Chris, because we've been talking all day about people's bad Thanksgiving takes here. Aaron Taylor, former all-everything college offensive lineman Notre Dame, former Green Bay Packers offensive tackle, said that he thinks that pumpkin pie and sweet potato pie basically taste the exact same here. I agree with him, but that feels like it's going to be a betrayal to a lot of people.
Yeah, that's a polarizing take right there, and I'm not here for the sweet potato pie slander. Like, the reality is that people eat candy yams or, you know, sweet potatoes all the time. Nobody's really signing up to eat a pumpkin outside of pumpkin pie. Like, that just doesn't happen.
Oh, are you backing up Bart Scott's take now?
I am backing up my homeboy Bart Scott. He is absolutely right with this take. The only time people are consuming anything pumpkin outside of pumpkin pie is a pumpkin spice latte from Starbucks. That about it, bruh. That's about it. So, yeah, I'm with Bart on that one. The sweet potato pie is greater than the pumpkin pie. And I'll have words with anyone that will say otherwise.
Chris, we eat fast food as Americans all the time. Who knows what's going on in that? Do we say the same thing with fast food?
I was going to say, as football players, Chris, let's be real. To get to game day, we have put things in our bodies that we understand far less than what goes into pumpkin pie.
That's probably a fair point. But though, here's the thing, Gojo. I know that if I did not put those things in my body, I would not be physically capable of doing what I did on Sundays for over a decade. I'm just saying.
And if I don't...
One allowed me to make a lot of money and have financial security. I don't know that pumpkin pie is doing that for me.
Pumpkin pie has given a lot of joy to a lot of people, Chris. I don't think we can overstate what it has given this nation, nay, this world.
If you're getting joy from pumpkin pie, just commit to the sweet potato pie. That's all I'm asking. Just give it a chance. Give it a chance. Kind of like what the Giants are doing with Dave Gettleman and Joe Judge and Daniel Jones this season.
There we go.
They're just giving it a chance. But ultimately, it's not really working out for the New York Football Giants.
No, it's not. That chance didn't really pay off here on Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Because I don't know if you guys heard, the Giants have been breaking moves by firing their offensive coordinator, Jason Garrett.
Breaking Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports.
So that was a thing that happened after we saw Monday Night Football, where, much to Chris Canty's dismay and to the pleasure of his fiance, the Buccaneers got a 20-point win in this game over a Giants team that, Chris, just really doesn't seem like, ultimately when you boil it down, has an identity, right? I can watch that game, and even if you showed that game to someone who didn't watch a lot of football, they look at it and say, man, Tampa Bay really attacked the edges of that defense a lot. They had, you know, a real big opportunity in the middle of the field using tight ends down in the deep middle. Oh, they were missing Logan Ryan in the back end. It all made sense. When you look at what the Giants do and have done under Joe Judge and Dave Gettleman, I struggle to find any semblance of an identity that's taken hold in a meaningful way.
Yeah, it just didn't make sense what their game plan was yesterday. And I know that Jason Garrett came into that game saying that they were going to put Daniel Jones in harm's way in terms of featuring him with the run game because they felt like that was the only way that they could provide some balance for their offense, being able to move the football on the ground. And that really didn't take shape the entire game. And it felt like there were some situations, some third downs, some fourth downs that called for it, and Jason Garrett didn't dial it up. And in the times where they did have planned quarterback runs, it felt like the front seven for the Tampa Bay Bucs snuffed that out. So there really wasn't a whole lot of success to speak of on that front. And I didn't think the Giants positioned themselves to take advantage of the deficiency of that defense for the Tampa Bay Bucs, which is their secondary that's missing a lot of key pieces. And Sean Murphy Bunting just got back. So, I mean, I saw the shot play that Kadarius Toney took down the field to Darius Slayton, and you almost got a pass interference call, but they pulled that one back because the feet got tangled up. But I just didn't think that they offered up enough shot plays for Daniel Jones and for that offense to try to test the secondary that has had some trouble being able to keep opposing passing attacks in check, especially the last couple of weeks. So to me, there's no semblance of an identity on the offensive side of the ball. And then defensively, it was too stagnant in terms of the looks, the fronts and coverages that Patrick Graham ran, knowing that Tom Brady, if he knows what your defense is in, he's probably going to be able to exploit it. That's what it looked like all night long. The only reason why the Bucs didn't score on certain possessions is because of Bucs miscues. It really didn't have anything to do with the Giants' defense being disruptive at all. The interception that Adoree Jackson got that set up the Giants in point-blank range for a touchdown, that was more about a miscue between Mike Evans, Tyler Johnson, and Tom Brady than anything else. So, again, some dumb football on display for Bruce Arians. I'm sure the Tampa Bay Bucs will get that cleaned up down the stretch. But for the New York Giants, this is another lackluster performance and one that makes you question why the hell are they staying the course when it comes to the hierarchy and the leadership structure in this organization, because it's clear to me that Joe Judge hasn't done the job when it comes to developing the talent that he's given, and Dave Gettleman hasn't done the job in terms of finding enough talented players. That was obvious on the field in all phases of the game last night because the New York Giants weren't even competitive.
A non-compete on Monday Night Football has changes already coming for the New York Giants. Again, Jason Garrett out as their offensive coordinator. Freddie Kitchens going to step in the interim role and coordinate from here on out, which means we'll get at least one game where that Giants offense looked competent enough for us to ask some questions here. But coming up next, let's stray away from the gutter here. Chris Canty will take care of the bottom five that we saw from this last weekend soon enough. But coming up next, it is Tuesday around here on Canty and Golic Jr. It is time to get to top five, bottom five, next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
All right, Chris, as we get started, I got the penthouse this week. Chris Canty will have you guys covered in the gutter for bottom five in a little bit. I want to start off with Colt McCoy. See, I think the backup quarterback position requires sort of a re-up of your license. In the same way some jobs have you have to go out here and retest, make sure you still have the skills capable of going out and handling the job, every once in a while as a backup quarterback, you got to go out here for a 2 or 3 game stretch and show everybody that you are still more than capable to sit back with that clipboard and collect checks. And, well, for Colt McCoy, 35 of 44 for 328 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a win over the Seattle Seahawks later, I would say he has stamped his membership card for yet another go-around.
No, it's not a bad day at the office for Colt McCoy. Most importantly, he continues to give the Arizona Cardinals some cushion when it comes to that competition that they have between the Rams and the NFC West. So that's the biggest thing. Right now, the Cardinals are up 2 games in the win column, and you might as well make it 2.5 games because they have the head-to-head win. I know those two teams have a matchup later on in the second half of this season, but Colt McCoy steadying the ship and allowing Kyler Murray to come back, being able to win 2 out of the last 3 games against division opponents, I just you can't say enough about having a competent backup, the value of that, and that was coming into play in their win over the Seahawks in Seattle this weekend.
Number four, I'm going to defense early on this one because I know everyone wants to talk about Jalen Hurts when it comes to the Philadelphia Eagles win. I want to head over to defense and talk about big play Slay. Darius Slay has been on an absolute tear right now. Scored a defensive touchdown in consecutive games, being the first player to do so this season in the NFL and the first Eagle to do it since Sheldon Brown back in 2009. Chris, he scored 1 touchdown in his first 125 NFL games. He's got 3 in his last 4 now. Dude's on fire.
Absolutely. It started in that homecoming game against the Detroit Lions, as you mentioned, and he's just been picking it up every single game, and that's saying a lot, man. I mean, he's providing a spark for that defense, and it feels like that unit is more bend, don't break, rather than being one of those shutdown groups. But that seems like it's good enough given where their offense has evolved to with that running game. So it's the perfect complement. I think they're doing it right in Philly. Nick Sirianni, he ain't going to win the press conference, but he's doing a good job of being able to find an identity for this football team, and you got to give him all the credit for being able to do that. Big play Slay is that veteran leadership that you're looking for. It just so happens that he's coupling that with the production as well. So I like the way that this Philadelphia Eagles team is trending, and like I said, based on the teams that are 5-win squads that are fighting for those last 2 wild card spots in the NFC, the Philadelphia Eagles are one of those 2 teams that I trust the most.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. It's the NFL Top 5 rolling along to number 3. And I feel like as we've talked about basically everything from this weekend already, we hit Tuesday, we hit the bigger picture issues here. We just kind of forgot that Justin Herbert went out and had an all-time performance against the Steelers in Sunday Night Football, right? Justin Herbert is the 3rd player in NFL history to throw for 350 yards and rush for 75 yards in the same game. It is Justin Herbert, Russell Wilson, and Mike bleeping Vick. That is it for this one. Chris, we know this Chargers team had a big-time lull after starting off and being the story of the early part of the NFL season. I can confidently say Justin Herbert has not been and will not be the problem for this team.
No, he's not going to be the problem, but Justin Herbert, the last month or so of the season, has been really up and down. I mean, you're talking about him posting 3 of his worst passing grades in the previous 4 games before that Sunday night showdown that he had with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, he bounced back in a major way, and that's the Justin Herbert that had a lot of people asking whether or not he was the best quarterback in the AFC, the best young quarterback in the AFC, even including Pat Mahomes in that group earlier on in the first half of the season. So I think some of that chatter has kind of quieted down, but it's clear that Justin Herbert isn't a flash in the pan and that he is on his way to becoming an elite quarterback in this league sooner rather than later. That performance that he had was big time, and the drive at the end, the throw that he had to Mike Williams, I think that speaks to the level that he's capable of playing at, because that was a money throw, saw the coverage, identified it, and hit his receiver in stride for the game-winning touchdown.
Number 2, we talked about a relative to the MVP case earlier that we don't need to make for Jonathan Taylor, who became just the 4th player in NFL history with 200 scrimmage yards and 5 touchdowns on the road in their dominant win over the Buffalo Bills. And Chris, we know the offensive line is going to get a ton of credit, but Jonathan Taylor has been doing dirty work at running back going all the way back to his days in Wisconsin. He should have been invited to the Heisman his senior year, and now in the NFL, he may not get MVP love, but he's going to get love in this top five.
No doubt about it. He deserves it. I mean, anytime you have a 5-touchdown performance, you're going to pop up in the top five, no doubt about it. But Jonathan Taylor is one of those players that I was saying is highly underrated. And I told guys a month ago that Jonathan Taylor is going to be offensive player of the year. Like, that's the kind of talent that he has. And he absolutely deserves the accolades to go along with it. What he means for that team, he is the identity of that offense along with the offensive line. And so, yeah, Jonathan Taylor's got to get a lot more love from us.
Speaking of identity, number one here on the top five here on Canty and Golic Jr., I should have given the Giants a lot more credit for their identity, because Dave Gettleman always did say that his team was about hog mollies. And last night we saw that on full display. We had beef in motion on Monday Night Football. Giants offensive tackle Andrew Thomas gets a touchdown grab in the low red zone, going up and high-pointing an absolute beauty. And that would have been enough to be number one in the top five, Chris, but we had a first in Monday Night Football. Because the Bucs got even on this. Steve McClendon, their D lineman, had an interception on an errant screen pass from Daniel Jones, making this, according to NFL research, the first time in NFL history that a 300-plus pound player had a touchdown reception and a 300-plus pound player had an interception in the same game. Where were you in this historic moment? What a time.
Oh, I mean, it was unbelievable, and I think the interception at Daniel Jones was more unbelievable than what we saw from Andrew Thomas, because that was a well-designed play from now former offensive coordinator Jason Garrett. But I don't know where the hell Daniel Jones was throwing that football to. Even the guys on the main broadcast couldn't figure it out, and after going back and watching Peyton and Eli's broadcast, they couldn't figure it out, whether it was to Billy Price, the offensive lineman, whether it was to Saquon Barkley that was by the sideline, or whether it was to number 41. Even they didn't know what the hell Daniel Jones is doing. So the interception was probably more incredible than the touchdown catch from Andrew Thomas, but I digress. I'm just in a mood when it comes to the New York Football Giants. So, Mike, don't blame me for it. Blame the Giants.
Hey, listen, I'm going to blame the Giants for a lot, but Jason Garrett went out on a high note by getting Andrew Thomas' hands on the rock here. That's just getting your best athletes to football. That's smart coaching there. Maybe we should reconsider this firing. Or maybe not. Coming up next, Dan Orlovsky is going to help us figure out where the Giants go from here after moving on from Jason Garrett on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Listen to the Man in the Arena podcast. It's a 10-part series exploring how sports impacts our everyday lives, all through the lens of Tom Brady's career, available wherever you get your podcasts, and brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. You need to finance a home loan like a pro? Rocket can. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And we have been talking about controversial Thanksgiving food takes all day here. Matt Judon and Mac Jones both got to the podium, New England Patriots stars, and offered controversy, slandering mac and cheese, Mac Jones going after pie. So as we head to the Goodyear hotline to talk to Dan Orlovsky about a number of important things about the New York Giants and the course of the season on the field for many teams, Dan, you are known for a lot of food takes here. I didn't know if you had a Thanksgiving take that you thought was particularly bad you wanted to get off your chest.
Well, it's not bad, but I don't eat turkey on Thanksgiving. I think it's a waste of belly space. I want sides. I can go to Jersey Mike's and get a Subway on Friday at turkey. So I don't eat turkey. I love the fact that Matt Judon doesn't eat mac and cheese on Thanksgiving Day. You can eat mac and cheese every other day. So I agree with that one. The pie one, I'm not on board with Mac. I'll continue to break down his tape really well, but I'm not on board with, but I don't eat turkey on Thanksgiving Day. I think it's a waste of space.
Dan, you know what? I actually think that's, Chris, I think that's a really good take. Like, turkey is not the star of the show, so Dan being pro sides, I'm actually really encouraged by this, Chris.
Yeah, listen, it's not my preferred bird when we start talking about poultry. I mean, I would prefer to have duck or chicken, but the wifey does turkey, so we do turkey. We give the bird his one day out of the 365-day calendar. So I'm not opposed to having the turkey, but it would be my preference to have another one. So I'm with Dan on that one. I'm not quite sure I can go with Dan on the mac and cheese because Matt Jannon said mac and cheese is disgusting. And I just don't know if I can trust somebody that feels that way. I put them right aside, people that don't like bacon and people that wear black Air Force Ones. You just can't trust them.
No, it's impossible to. So
black Air Force Ones. Stupid.
Dan Orlovsky with us on the Goodyear Hotline. All right, so I don't know if Dan was wearing black Air Force Ones talking about the Giants offense today, but Dan, the Giants decide to fire their offensive coordinator, Jason Garrett. What has to happen next for them? Freddie Kitchens taking over. What has this offense been missing that they can still try and salvage this season?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about it for months now. Number one, they use their pieces the wrong way. Okay, I would use Kenny Golladay the same way that the Arizona Cardinals use DeAndre Hopkins. They don't ask him to run a ton of routes. It's, hey, go win, and you're not really ever covered. We're just going to give you opportunity throws. I would use Kadarius Toney the same way the 49ers use Deebo Samuel. How many different ways can I give you the ball? I'll hand it off to you. I'll throw it to you. I'll get you on reverse. Like, how many different ways? I would use Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton the way the Bills use Cole Beasley. Give you in the slot and just go win on some space, you know, RPO, give you the ball and just give me 6-7 yards. Like, I feel like they've used those guys the wrong way. Saquon needs more touches. He had 12 last night, I believe. Like, what? So those are the skill position pieces. This isn't a quick fix. I don't expect this offense to get significantly better over the next 5 or 6 weeks. So I really think the next step, Mike, is number one, are you keeping the general manager? Because the general manager is attached to the quarterback and the receiver. If you're not keeping the general manager, who is it going to be? And then after that, are you keeping the head coach? And if you're keeping the head coach, he has to hire someone to answer the question, do you feel that you can get rid of the number one fundamental flaw that has been Daniel Jones' flaw since he came out of Duke? He panics with the football. And then that coach has to decide if he can or cannot. And if he can, you better hire the right guy. And if he can't, you got to then address the quarterback spot. There's a lot of moving parts to this one decision.
Dan, and in trying to play the blame game and figure out who's most responsible when it comes to the lack of development for Daniel Jones, is this something that's been on the Giants coaching staff since he's been drafted? Or is this more about the general manager not picking the right quarterback?
Yeah, I think it starts with the general manager not picking the right quarterback. I think we all, the great majority of us, where he was selected. I think Daniel Jones can be a good player. You're not selected at 6 to be good. You're selected at 6 to be transformative, to be generational, to be an eraser. And Daniel Jones isn't talented enough to be that. I think he could be a good player. I think he could be a Kirk Cousins type of player, but that's not what you take at 6. So it starts with the selection. It's not Daniel Jones' fault. And then it goes to the development. Yeah, it goes to this. Were we creative enough? No. Did we evolve? No. Have we developed? No. And that's the crux of this. And so, you know, again, everybody's hand is attached to this.
A lot going on. Canty Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, talking to Dan Orlovsky, our ESPN NFL analyst, with us on the Goodyear Hotline here. Dan, one of the other big results from this weekend, the Dallas Cowboys take the L to the Kansas City Chiefs here. Are these systemic problems for the Cowboys down the stretch of the season here, or what did you see from this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to make it too big a deal about it because the starters, Tyron Smith, Amari Cooper, out, CeeDee Lamb doesn't play in the second half. But this is two out of the last three games that they've played poorly on offense. It's two out of the last three games that their quarterback has played poorly. That's just the truth for all the Cowboys fans that want to get their, you know, emotions attached to it. I'd say this, Gojo. I'm kind of liking some teams that are run first, throw second, and ability to, or in the philosophy that's who we are. That's what we do best. The Cowboys are reversed. I think that they throw the best and run as a secondary option. And we've seen that in the last two, either three losses or two out of the last three games, that they've leaned a little bit on it. And it'll just be really, I think Thursday's a massive game for the Cowboys, man. I really do. Specifically, if Amari doesn't play and Tyron doesn't play and a CD doesn't play, man, this and those tackles struggle again, this is a team in Las Vegas that can rush the quarterback. And I think it's enormous. I'm not just chalking this up as, oh, the Cowboys will beat the Raiders. And, you know, I'm just – the Cowboys have slowed a little bit. And, you know, their defense is played well. But I'm watching this offense. They need to gain kind of some of the mojo back, my belief in who they are back.
A lot of identity crisis is going on in the NFL down the stretch of the season here. We got Dan Orlovsky helping us figure them out as we go along, though. Dan, always a pleasure, buddy. Great stuff on NFL Live. We'll talk to you soon. All right, man?
Thanks, boys. Have a good evening. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too, buddy. Have a great Thanksgiving to you and the family here. Dan Orlovsky, who you can catch breaking it all down, 4 o'clock Eastern every Monday through Friday on NFL Live with that crew. Coming up next, though, we've talked so much about the Giants today and the moves that they've made after an embarrassing performance on Monday Night Football. They are not the only New York football team that is out here embarrassing themselves with roster moves. We will tell you what the hell the Jets did next on ESPN Radio. Everybody's having a great time here on Tuesday on Canty and Golic Jr. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. We're heading into the Thanksgiving holiday week here. The bird is almost in the oven. We got side dish controversy going all over the timeline. We'll get to more of your bad Thanksgiving takes at ChrisCanny99 and at Mike Golic Jr. on the Dr. Pepper Twitter line. Everyone's having a great time unless you happen to play for a New York football team, Chris, because we talked about the Giants firing Jason Garrett, their offensive coordinator, and now we got this over happening with the New York Jets. I would not be shocked, normally hearing the headline, that rookie quarterback Zach Wilson, who had missed the last 4 games with a sprained knee, is going to return to start against the Texans on Sunday. This, according to a league source telling Rich Cimini, our ESPN Jets reporter. That makes sense to me, because he's the number 2 overall bleeping pick in the draft, and you got to keep getting this guy reps, because he doesn't have a lot of football under his belt. However, sources told ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter that quarterback Mike White tested positive for quarterback and that quarterback Joe Flacco was deemed a close contact and both were put on the COVID-19 list. Josh Johnson is being promoted from the practice squad to back up Wilson, Chris. And it's just a reminder that Joe Flacco, the guy who got the start last week for you, was brought over and has publicly stated that he is not vaccinated, which means that had he been, this likely would have been less of an effect on him, still a chance that he could have played this weekend, and ultimately could have been a guy that you trotted out there yet again if that's something the Jets wanted to do. So the whole decision-making process for this organization continually coming under fire for all reasons that they make themselves.
So let me get this right, Mike. When you had the opportunity to go after Joe Flacco this offseason and let him be a veteran presence for your young quarterback and helping him to develop, you decided not to do that. You didn't think that was in the best interest of your team. You rolled with Zach Wilson and Mike White and then later brought in Josh Johnson. It gets to the trade deadline right after the Zach Wilson injury. You bring in Joe Flacco, but then make the decision to start Mike White. He balls out, and so you're thinking, maybe we should stay with the Mike White train just a little while longer. Turns out after his third opportunity to start a game, he didn't look so hot. You pivot to Joe Flacco for what reason? I'm not quite sure why they did that. They end up losing the game to the Miami Dolphins anyway, even though they went with a veteran quarterback, not giving Mike White an opportunity to get more reps to see if he can develop into a viable option for you at the quarterback spot, whether as a backup or as an asset that you can flip. And now Joe Flacco is potentially infecting the rest of the quarterback room with COVID-19 because he's unvaccinated. That sounds like an awful game plan, but yet I'm not surprised because we are talking about the New York Jets. And even though there are a lot of new faces within the Jets hierarchy, it seems like the same dysfunction that's been going on in yesteryear is affecting the Robert Saleh, Joe Douglas program that they're trying to get off the ground. So I'm not quite sure what the Jets are doing, but it's clear they have no semblance of a plan when it comes to how they're going to develop the quarterbacks on this roster and how they're going to get Zach Wilson, the number 2 overall pick, to realize his potential.
And you know what, Chris? That's the sad part is it sounds eerily familiar to what's going on the other side of the building, right? We talked about the Giants not having a plan to develop Daniel Jones. But no one looked at Joe Judge as the next marquee coaching candidate around the NFL. He wasn't a hot name that came in with the weight of a ton of expectation. Daniel Jones was a draft pick that I questioned at the sixth overall spot here. And so in that situation, you can look and say, hey, listen, there's a lot of moving parts that make this thing go wrong. Robert Saleh was supposed to be one of the hotter coaching names in the offseason. The Jets were supposedly getting a good one here. Zach Wilson was a talent that people loved coming out of BYU this last year. Massive arm, all the Mahomes off-platform stuff here. And they have already managed to Jets this thing up so badly here that this last instance is just laughable in ways that are far different, but symptomatic of the same thing. A decision-making process here that apparently still comes from the top down in a way that affects what was supposed to be legitimately good parts you brought in.
Not to mention, Mike, the open criticism of the number two overall draft pick from the head coach. How many times did we hear Rob Saleh when Mike White had an opportunity to play or when things went left when Zach Wilson was starting that the quarterback needs to take the checkdowns, the quarterback needs to make the boring play because that's going to allow our offense to sustain drives. How many times did we hear that from Rob Saleh? I mean, that's an open indictment on the number two overall pick, and this is a player that you're responsible for developing. So at some point, you're either coaching it or you're letting it happen, and you have to look at Rob Saleh with a little bit of a side eye saying the way that he's bungled things in terms of managing the quarterback situation in the wake of the Zach Wilson injury is cause for pause in terms of having confidence in his overall program in the direction that he wants to take this team. So if you're a Jets fan today, you can't feel great even with the news that Zach Wilson is actually going to start a game for the first time in a month. You don't feel good about it because you realize that it doesn't seem like there's any semblance of a plan. And so, yeah, it's all bad for New York football. But New York football fans are used to it because that's pretty much what they've seen for the last 3 or 4 years.
It is so true, Chris, what you brought up here. It is about the process, not the results. You got to the right answer here, but when asked to show your work right now, the Jets are embarrassing themselves on the written page with how they got to this one, and that's unfortunately been this process. It's been headlines and sound bites from your coach on radio talking about the quarterback competition in ways that don't make sense. It's been fights with former Jets head coaches, and now your backup quarterback's ending up on the COVID list, so your rookie gets back into this situation. All of those bungles pale in comparison to me earlier in this segment apparently saying that Mike White tested positive for the position that he played. Quarterback Mike White tested positive for quarterback, and that quarterback Joe Flacco was deemed a close contact. I'm sure the Jets would love for someone on their roster to test positive for quarterback, Chris. That would be such a welcome change there.
I mean, they've been searching for it for a really long time. When's the last time the Jets could say they had a franchise quarterback? I mean, maybe Chad Pennington? That was a while ago. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure that Jets fans would like somebody in that room to test positive for quarterback because right now the second overall pick is not off to the best of starts.
Not a great start here as Mike White tests positive for COVID-19, and hopefully one day Zach Wilson will test positive for quarterback. Coming up next, Jason Fitz, positive with some of the worst food takes and college football takes. Next.